All right, we're beginning here on the top of Kuvlai Meten and Madala, three lines down. The Gemara asks, Hani Muktashim Echidami. We said in the Mishnah that when it comes to the Shiluach HaKein, it has application by Chulin. It does not have application by Muktashim. What exactly is the scenario where you have Muktashim, where you're going to be Potur? Ilema Davile Kein Betoch Beto. It's a case where he has a nest inside of his house. Ve'akdashe. And then he was matishit mi mechayiv. Since when would you be chayav? The pasuk says ki karei kan sipur prat lemizuman. It has to be something where you chance upon it, not something where it is already ready made. It's inside of your house. That doesn't count towards kan sipur. So there's no chiyuv kan sipur to speak about. So then the hekdesh or not hekdesh is irrelevant. Ela dechaza kein ba'alma. He sees out on the road some nest. And he makes it Kodesh. My asks, Umi Kadosh? Is it really Kadosh in that situation? The Pasuk says, it's quoted by Rabbi Yochanan in a number of places in Shas with regards to Geneva and Gezeila, which is Ish, Ki Yagdishet Beito Kodesh La Hashem, Richo HaKoein, Bein Tobu Bein Rak, Asher Richo To HaKoein, Ken Yakum. So the Gemara brings the Pasuk because it has two aspects to it. It is Ish, Ki Yagdishet Beito, Kodesh, Amar Rachmana, Ma Beito, Birshuto, Avkol birshuto. You have to have two factors in order to be makdish something. You need, first of all, ownership. Number two is you need control. And so you have to have both things in order to be makdish it. If you're lacking in any one of those two aspects, then you can't be makdish something. That's usually what happens or why it's brought with regards to Geneva and Gzela, which is that the ownership is still with the original owners and the control is with the Ganav or the Gazlan. So both of them can't be makdish it. Because they have a failure, each one of them, in one aspect. Over here, this isn't in your possession. It's hefker out there. You haven't taken possession of it. So the fact that you're makdish shit has no bearing because it's not, first of all, for sure not in your control. You haven't even taken it into your possession yet. And besides not being in your control, it's not even within your ownership at this point. Ella dagbinu lefruchim. That he picked up the chicks, vaktashinu, and he's makdish them. Bahadur hadrinu. And then he puts them back in the nest. Mar says, Hayya filu b'chulin, nami lo mechayiv. Forget about hekdesh. Even in chulin, you're not going to be chayav in this case. Detana, notel et abanim, vekziram the kain. He takes out the chicks, and then he puts them back in the nest. Bakaka chazraya aim, malehem. And then the mother shows up at that point and hovers over them again. Patur mele shaleach. You don't have to send away the mother anymore because you already took possession of the children, the chicks, before the mother was there. Once you've taken possession of the banim, there's no longer the mitzvah of the shaleach et ha'im. The shaleach et ha'im is before you take the children. If you already have possession of the children, then you don't need to send away the mother anymore. Ella, alright, da'ak ba'al de'im. The case where they picked up the mother. You took possession of the mother, va'ak desha, and your makdishit v'hadro. And then she returns to hover over the eggs, over the chicks. Where it says, Mikara ichayev lebi shiluach, ikame da'akdasha. You were already under the obligation to send away the mother before you ever were makdishit. At the point where you were makdish the mother, there's already an obligation to send her away. Just because you're makdisher doesn't then obviate your need to take care of that shiluach. And the example is the Tanya, Rabbi Yochanan ben Yosef Omer, Higdish Chayak. Case where he's makdish, obviously to berek abayit, chaya does not go on the mizbeach, v'achar kach shachata, and then afterwards he shechs it, patur milachasot. You don't have to do kisui adam, because in that case, the hekdesh preceded the shechita, and the obligation for kisui adam derives from the shechita, and that's not the case when you do shechita and berek abayit, it's not a shechita, ha-re'uya, as Rashi says, so it doesn't require a kisui adam, shachata, v'achar kach hekdisha. If you shecht it first, and then your makdish, the carcass, the meat, at that point in time, chayav lechasot, there you have to do kisui adam, shekvar nitchayev b'kisui adam, kodem sheyavol idei hekdesh. Before it went into the possession of the hekdesh, the obligation already devolved upon the person. So too over here, the obligation to send away the mother preceded your being makdish the mother. So just because you're makdish the mother now, that doesn't change the status quo, which is that you're chayav to send away the mother. So now the answer is one of two options. Rav Amar b'magdish perot shovcho umardu. The case where he's magdish, the offspring of his shovach, which is his dove coat, and they merdu. They decided that they weren't so happy over here, and they ran away and nested somewhere else. So originally he has sufficient control over them. Originally they're in his possession. And from that aspect, he has the capacity to be magdish them. Once he's magdish them, then they take off and fly away and decide that they're not going to stay here anymore, and they gain their independence by doing such. So that's Rav's view. Shmuel Amar b'magdish tana galoto l'bedek abayit. The case where he's magdish his chicken l'bedek abayit. Obviously, he's trying to gold it, first of all, because they're domesticated, they're with him in the house, but more importantly, because they don't go on the mizbeach. And so Shmuel is clearly saying that it is l'bedek abayit. He's magdish it only kedushat damim, not kedushat mizbeach, which clearly indicates that Rav meant that you were magdish them kedushat mizbeach, which means that you're intending that the chicks that are going to be born from your dove coat, those I'm going to dedicate to the mikdash. Why he says the chicks and not the doves that are in the dove coat right now is because, as Rashi says over here, we're talking about yonim, you're talking about pigeons, they're only bnei yonah that are ksherim, which means ktanim. That's why he's makdish the offspring and not the actual yonim themselves. So then he said, and that's kedushat mizbeach, and then they took off. Now, Gemara says, Bishlamah Shmuel lo amar k'rav. Shmuel didn't explain that k'rav, the kamukim la, b'kodshei berek abayit. Because he makes the case of kodshei berek abayit, which is a bigger chiddush. The chiddush that kodshei berek abayit are strong enough to obviate the need for shiluach hakein, that's already a bigger chiddush than saying that kodshei mizbeach, which is inherent kedusha, there would make more sense to say you're patur. But kodshei berek abayit, where it's just a monetary hekdesh, you would have thought maybe not. So Shmuel comes along and gives you that chiddush. El Rav, my time alone, Mark Shmuel. But why does Rav reject that explanation? It might be that what he's saying is true, but if what Shmuel says is true, it's a bigger chiddush. He says, "I'm a Chorav, davka kapatre mishiluach kagon perot shokho the kodshe mizbeach ninu enochanami." Rav believes that only when you have kodshe mizbeach is that kedusha strong enough to obviate the need for shiluach. The kevin the kodshe kedusha the goof. Lo poka kedushotayu minayu. The kedusha doesn't leave them. Once they have kedushat mizbeach, it's an inherent kedusha, that even when they're moreid, even when they decide they're packing out, and they're not staying here anymore, that doesn't change the status quo, which is that they are kodesh bekedushat aguf. Aval magdish tarnagoloto, the berek abayit, when you magdish the tarnagolot for berek abayit, the lav kodshe mizbeach, that is not a case of kodshe mizbeach, it's only kedushat amim. The kedushat tamim ba'al mahu, it's only monetary kedusha. Kevin de merda, once they are already rejecting the ownership control of the master here, of the owner over here, paka kedushatayu. The kedusha leaves them, v'chayevet b'shiluach, and therefore you would be chayav in shiluach hakein. The reason being, because kedushat tamim is exactly what it sounds like. It's a monetary obligation to hekdesh, to redeem or present this item to Hekdesh, but that is subject to the normal dinim of Damim, which is that if you lose something, then if you're Miyaesh, if you give up hope of ever bringing it back or returning it, then your ownership dissipates from the item, and so too over here. The idea would be that this Kedushat Damim dissipates because of the fact that you have now had Yeush on it. Since you've had Yeush on it, there's no longer the hekdesh that remains on it because you're no longer the owner and hekdesh doesn't have it. So between the two of you, there's nobody in control of this item. You've both given up hope of getting it back. In that case, it becomes hefker. If it's hefker, then the kedusha, according to Rav, dissipates in that situation. Tosfot points out there's actually a nafkamina here. The fact that when they're merdu, when they rebel, paka kedushotayu, that their kedusha dissipates or leaves them, that means that if you have animals that are chulin, and they are moreid, and they rebel against their owners and pack out of there, that they have a din of hefker at that point in time, because if it's enough of a yeush to remove the hekdesh that's associated with them, that means it's enough of a yeush to remove the ownership of the balim over it, and that means that they become hefker, and another individual takes possession of them, they would actually own it because it's coming from hefker, and not from the individual who previously had control over these animals. But Kedusha the Guf, Yeush doesn't matter. Kedusha the Guf is an inherent Kedusha that affects the animal itself to the point where it can't just shrug off the Kedusha. Yeush isn't going to have be impactful with regards to Kedusha Taguf. That's not a monetary obligation. That's inherent Kedusha. Yeush doesn't change the fact that it is Kadosh. Ushmol Amar, Shmol has to deal with the fact that if you have Yeush over here, how is it that the Kedusha remains? His answer is, Kohecha De'ite, anywhere the animal is found right now, Bebegazo De'rachmana Ita. It is in the treasury of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Dichtiv, Mashem Ha'aretz Umloa. God's ownership is everywhere. The land and everything else belongs to God. No matter where the item is, it's already in the possession of God. Yeush comes when you lose control, possession over the item, and you're unable to retrieve the item. It's left your auspices, and that's why you have Yeush. By the Gizbar, when you speak about a human being, the treasurer of the Mikdash, you can speak about him having Yeush. But vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there is no Yeush because Hashem is everywhere. Hashem owns everything. And therefore, no matter where it's found, it's in the treasury, quote-unquote, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because Hashem Aretz Umloa, everything belongs to God. So, yes, there's Yeush from the owner's standpoint, maybe even from the Gizbar's standpoint, but from the Hekdesh standpoint, there's no Yeush over here because it's still within the auspices of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'chein amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan gives the similar explanation to Shmuel. B'magdish tarnagulato l'perek abayit u'merda. The case where he was magdish at the perek abayit and it took off. After being in your possession, therefore you had the rights and capacity to be magdish it, it took off. And now it's koche perek abayit out of your control. Now it becomes ki kare kan sipur. You could bump into it. It's not under ownership or control of any individual. And therefore you'd be chayav in shiluach hakein, but for the fact that it's hekdesh. And the hekdesh is what's poter you in this case. So if you bump into such a bird, then you're going to be poter shiluach hakein. In all likelihood, it's the owner that's going to be the one who bumps into the bird, who knows that it's hekdesh, and he's going to be poter from shiluach hakein. Amar lei Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, keman shemerda pakala kedushata. He says basically what Rav said to Shmuel. He says it to Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, that's great, but didn't the Kedusha disappear when it took off? So Rabbi Yochanan answers Rish Lakish's query the same way that Shmuel answered Rav, which is, it's under Hashem's auspices. It doesn't really leave the hand of Hekdesh. And because of that, it still remains with its Kedusha, and the Kedusha does not dissipate here. Tosafot does point out that the Lashon of what we brought as the reasoning behind why you are patur by Kodoshim is a little problematic with the Lashon or the explanation of what we brought yesterday as to why you are patur by Kodoshim. Because over there it says, Damarkash shaleach tishalach et ha'aim. Excluded is this aim which you're not commanded to send away, but rather bring it to the Gizbar. Now that works well when you're speaking about Kodshei Berek Abayit. That does not work well when you're speaking about Kodshei Mizbeach. And the truth is, both Rav and Shmuel agree by Kodshei Mizbeach that there is this tour by Hekdesh. It's only a question of Kodshei Berek Abayit is also included. But the Lashon of what we brought as the reasoning behind why you are patur by Kodshei Mizbeach is somewhat problematic because the tour derives from that which you are obligated to bring to the Gizbar and not to send away. Gizbar is only a relevant party by Kodshei Berek Abayit, not by Kodshei Mizbeach. What you have to say is that Gizbar here is not literally the Gizbar, but rather your obligation to bring it or present it somewhere else versus a situation in which you are free to send it away. And so Gizbar, yes, is by Kodshei Berek Abayit, by Kodshei Mizbeach. You have a separate obligation to ensure that it gets on the Mizbeach, and that obligation makes it that you can't send it away, but rather you have to bring it, and that's why there's no din of Shiluach HaKein by Kodshei Mizbeach. V'rami d'Rabbi Yochanan ad-Rabbi Yochanan, v'rami d'Reish Lakish, here we have a stira in the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan and a stira in the sheet of Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Deidmar, mane ze leberek abayit. He dedicates his makdish 100 dinar to berek abayit. Ben nignivu o nevdu. It was stolen or lost. Rabbi Yochanan amar, chayav acher yutan. You are responsible to ensure that the monies get to Hekdesh. The disappearance of the monies is your problem. Because basically Hekdesh has recourse against you, ad sheyavo lidei Gizbar, until they reach the hand of the treasurer. It's your problem till Hekdesh gets it in its possession. And since it didn't reach Hekdesh, you now have to replace those 100 dinarim that got lost. Rish Lakish Amar Koecha Deita BeMegazla DeRachmana Ite. And Rish Lakish takes up the position of Rabbi Yochanan and says, wherever they are, they're in the possession of Hekdesh, and therefore you have no residual responsibility or obligation to replace the money. So the Gemara says, Kasha the Rish Lakish, the Rish Lakish, the steer in Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish just queried Rabbi Yochanan. When it runs away, it loses its Kedusha. And over here he's saying it's lost, and it still remains in the hand of Hekdesh. And Kasha the Rabbi Yochanan, the Rabbi Yochanan, is a steer in Rabbi Yochanan. Before Rabbi Yochanan says, wherever it is, it's in the hand of Hekdesh. Now he's saying, it disappeared, it's your problem, it's your responsibility now to replace it. The Rish Lakish and the Rish Lakish lo Kasha, the member of Rish Lakish is not a stiro. Ha mikami de shamemi de Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi. Ha de bata de shamemi Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi. He questioned Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan responded to him. So when he was questioning, he didn't know that principle or that logic, and therefore he asked, doesn't the Kedusha disappear when the animal runs away? He got the answer from Rabbi Yochanan, no, it doesn't, because it's in the possession of Hekdesh, no matter where it is. After he heard that from Rabbi Yochanan, he accepted that answer. Then when it came to the next scenario, which is the one with the money, he took up that position that Rabbi Yochanan had taught him. Ella, the Rabbi Yochanan kasha. But for Rabbi Yochanan, it's a stira. When I said, the Rabbi Yochanan nami lo kasha, that's also not a contradiction. Hadamar alai, hadamar harizo. There is a difference between how you present this to Hekdesh. Do you present it as basically, and we're going to see in a second, a neder or a nidava? Do you make it a personal responsibility to ensure that the item reaches Hekdesh? And that means that there's two components to this. There's one component, which is the neder component, which is the money that belongs to Hekdesh, that you've fulfilled because that's in the hands of Hekdesh no matter where it is. But you have a secondary obligation, which is that you will personally ensure that Hekdesh receives this item. That's when you say, Hare Alai. I take responsibility for the fact that this money will end up in Hekdesh. So the monies are in the hands of Hekdesh. But you were not the one who personally made sure that that happened. That failure means that you fail at the neder. And in order to fulfill your neder, you need to bring the other 100 dinarim. Again, maybe not because of the money that is owed to Hekdesh, but to fulfill your personal obligation to ensure the item reaches the hands of Hekdesh. Whereas if you say, Hare Zo, this item is Hekdesh, then that A item itself is Hekdesh. You have no residual responsibility towards that item or fiduciary duty to ensure that it reaches the Mikdash. You made it with Hekdesh. Hekdesh takes possession of it no matter where it is. And then if it gets lost or stolen, you have no residual obligation over here. And that'll be the difference between Hare Alai versus Hare Zo. The problem with that is, Michlau de Revishim ben Lakish, Apagav Damar Alai, Lo Mechayev. Rish Lakish is arguing on Rabbi Yochanan in this scenario. You're saying this to explain Rabbi Yochanan's position. So in explaining Rabbi Yochanan's position, you say, by the case where the bird ran away, there he said, Hare Zo. Therefore, wherever it is, it's in the hands of Hekdesh, you have no further responsibility. Here, by the monies, he said, Hare Alai, and therefore you still have this residual responsibility. But that implies that when Rish Lakish argues on Rabbi Yochanan and says, wherever it is, it's in the hands of Hekdesh, he's saying that even when you say Hare Alai, even when you say it's my personal responsibility, Rish Lakish is saying, no, it isn't. You don't have to worry about it. Why is that the case? We have the Mishnah that says, Ezu neder v'ezu inid nedava. What's the difference between a neder and a nedava? Neder ha'umerai Hare Alai Ola. A neder is a situation in which you take personal responsibility for ensuring the item ends up with Hekdesh. Nidava homer hare zo ola. It's when you identify the item and make the item into, whether it's Hekdesh, the Bedek Abayit, or whether it's Hekdesh Mizbeach, but you say hare zo ola. So even in the case where you pick the animal afterwards, that's not going to change the dynamic, which is that if you say hare alai ola, I'm responsible to bring an ola, then you say about this animal that you have in your yard, Hare Zo Ola. This is going to fulfill that neder. It doesn't change the fact that if that animal gets lost now, you're still responsible. Because the Hare Zo Ola is really subordinate to the Hare Alai Ola. The reason you're making that into an Ola is because you have a personal obligation. Your personal obligation doesn't go away just because you pointed to a specific animal and said, this animal is going to be the Ola. It's only the first statement that you make that is binding in that sense of neder and nedava. The first statement is a personal obligation. It will remain with you no matter how you execute on that. Doesn't matter if you designate something, you don't designate something, you're responsible to get it there. If you start out harizola, then you put the kedusha on the item, and you have no personal responsibility. It's in the hands of Hekdesh now. Hopefully it gets there. Hopefully you bring it there. But even if it doesn't, as far as your obligations are concerned, you just start that by making it Hekdesh, and that in of itself is the end of your neder. Uma ben neder the nidava. What's the difference? What's the nafkamina between a neder and nidava? Neder, meta o nignava o shavda. If it dies, it's stolen, or it's lost, chayav v'achriyuta. You're responsible to replace it. Nidava, if it was a voluntary offering, but in the sense that you didn't take personal responsibility, meta o nignava o shavda, enu chayav v'achriyuta. If it dies, it's stolen or lost, you have no further responsibility. So now, this Mishnah makes it clear, if you say harei alai, like the machlok between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish was about, he obligated himself in Meir Dinar, and Rabbi Yochanan saying harei alai, Meir Dinar, and it got lost, or it was stolen, and Reish Lakish is still saying, no problem, you have no personal responsibility. So how could that be? So Gemara says, Amalekha Reish Lakish, Reish Lakish will say, Hani milei kodshe mizbeach. That's only true when you're dealing with kodshe mizbeach. Demechuser hakrova, because you're missing the aspect of presenting it. Aval kodshe perek abayit, the la mechuser hakrova, there's not missing that point of presenting it. Afagav damar elai lo mechayev. Even if you say alai, it doesn't obligate you. So the concept being what I mentioned before, when you take a neder, there are two aspects to the neder. One is making the item Hekdesh. That, by definition, is in the hands of Hekdesh already. There's a secondary aspect, which is you are now personally responsible to ensure it ends up doing whatever you said it would do. By the case of Kodshe Mizbeach, what you said you were going to do is bring an Olah, bring a Korban. So there, when you lose the animal, or the animal is stolen, then yes, you fulfilled in terms of your obligation to make something Hekdesh that you did fulfill. What you did not fulfill is your obligation to present it and make it a korban. You never got it to the Mikdash, you never got it to the Mizbeach. That's Mechuser HaKrava. By Kodshei Perek HaBayit, that's not the case. Because Kodshei Perek HaBayit is ensuring that the monies end up in the hand of Hekdesh. In that case, even if you never get them to the Gizbar, the concept or the principle we established now is that wherever it is, it's in the hands of Hekdesh. So as soon as you were makdish, the monies to fulfill your obligation, not only did you fulfill the tzad that you were give these monies to Hekdesh, it also reached the hand of Hekdesh immediately. Because wherever it is, it's in the hand of Hekdesh. That's the concept that we have here. Given that, then you can bifurcate the din between Kodshe Mizbeach and Kodshe Bedek Abayit. By Kodshe Mizbeach, you do not fulfill your neder until you get it to the Mizbeach, until you get it to the Mikdash. On the other hand, by Kodshe Bedek Abayit, you fulfilled your obligation immediately. As soon as you are makdish it, it's now in the hands of Hekdesh. Once it's in the hands of Hekdesh, you've done both aspects of the nether. You provided the money, and you got it to the hand of Hekdesh. Now the Gemara says, Vahatnan, can you really divide or bifurcate this din? We have the Mishnah in Arachin. Omer, shor ze ola, bayit ze korban. Person says, this shor will be an ola. Bayit ze korban. Korban over here does not mean a korban. You can't bring a house. It's a korban. Korban means hekdesh, that you are makdishin for its monetary value to the bedek bayit. Meta shor nafala bayit. The shor dies or the house collapses. Eino chayav b'achriyutan. You're not responsible for them. Shor ze alai ola. Bayit ze alai korban. If he does it with, instead of saying this item is hekdesh, this item is going to the mizbeach, he says, this item is, I am responsible for this item being an olah. I am responsible for this house being a korban. In that case, meta shor, v'nafala bayit, the shor dies, or the house collapses, chayav lishalem. Over there, you are responsible to replace it. Now, it's clear, the shor ze alay olah is not a question on Reish Lakish, because that's a case of kodshei mizbeach. And he agreed by kodshei mizbeach, you do have personal responsibility when you say olah. But the second case, which is bayit ze alai korban, that's clearly a bedek abayit responsibility. And you're saying harei ze alai in that situation. And it's telling you you are responsible for it, even though it's only bedek abayit, because you said alai. So Reish Lakish answers, hani milei eched meita shor v'nafala bayit, Kayav l'shalem. That's only true if the shore died or the house collapsed. There you have to replace it. Deletnehu, because they don't exist anymore. Now, of course, as Tosafot points out, for the shore, you don't need it to die. Because Reish Lakish agrees, by Kodesh Mizbeach, you're responsible for it no matter what happens, even if it's stolen or lost. But by the house collapsing, that makes it that it's now no longer extant. In that case, you need to replace it. The concept that it's in the hands of Hekdesh, no matter where it is if it exists, then it can be in the hands of Hekdesh. If it doesn't exist, it can't be in the hands of Hekdesh. So if the house collapses, then it never really was in the hands of Hekdesh, and that's why you have to replace it. If it exists, then it's in the hands of Hekdesh, even though it's not in your possession right now, and it's not in the possession of the Gizbar, but wherever it is, it's in the possession of Hekdesh. Obviously, Rabbi Yochanan is going to disagree with this, and that's because there is a moment at the time when it was in your possession before it collapsed, that technically it moved to the hands of Hekdesh. So why then is you did not fulfill it right then, even though now it's collapsing? It has to be sustained in the hands of Hekdesh? It doesn't seem to me that there's such an obligation. But Reish Lakish will answer is that we use this concept that since it didn't reach the hands of the Gizbar, it's still in the hands of Hekdesh. That's only if the potential for it to reach the hands of the Gizbar still exists. But if that doesn't exist anymore, then it's not in the hands of Hekdesh because it never can reach the hands of the Gizbar. So you have to explain it somewhere along those lines. But for Rabbi Yochanan over here, even if the shore doesn't die, and even if the house doesn't fall down, you're still responsible to ensure that it gets there. Meaning that if something else happens to the house, somebody jacks up the house and wheels it off, you're going to be responsible for that house because of the fact that he thinks when you say a lie, you have responsibility, whether it's Kodesh Mizbeach, whether it's Kodesh Perek HaBayit. We tried to explain the logic why over here. And Reish Lakish is going to say that if it doesn't exist, then you can't say that it's in the hands of Hekdesh, even though maybe momentarily it was in the hands of Hekdesh. That's not sufficient. You need to have it in the hands of Hekdesh with the potential to reach the hands of the Gizbar in order to discharge your obligation. And that explains the difference in their opinion, as well as the contradiction in their positions. Amar Rav Amnuna, Hakol Modim Ba'arachin. Everybody agrees Ba'arachin, Afagav Damar Alai. Even when you take personal responsibility, Lo Michayev. That doesn't really mean personal responsibility. My Taima, Delo Mitmar Le Below Alai. There's no way to express Arachin without saying the word Alai. We're going to get to Masechet Arachin a little later on in Kodoshim, but the Torah at the end of Sefer Vayikra lays out a list or a table of values for individuals based on their gender and age. And when a person dedicates either their erech or someone else's erech, which the literal translation of the word means value, so if you dedicate it, then you go to the table, you look up the age and the gender, and that's how much you owe to Hekdesh. If you want to really dedicate their value to Hekdesh, then you say their damim. Damim means their actual value and not their table value. And that's expressed through damim. So now, if a person wants to give the erech, how does they express it? Hey chalema, what do you want them to say? Lema erki, he says, my value. Aman, you don't know who's responsible to bring his value to the Mikdash. He just said, my value. That has no context as to who's obligated in this case. Lema erech ploni, that person's value. Again, aman, that person's value, but who's responsible for that person's value? The idea being that a lie is essential to the expression of arachin, and therefore it doesn't have the meaning of personal responsibility. When you have another option to be matish something like Hare Zo instead of Hare Alai, then Hare Alai indicates personal obligation because you chose to say it that way rather than the other way. If the only way to say it is Hare Alai, then it's not expressing personal obligation. You're just saying, I want to present this Erech. And that's what he's suggesting over here. Matkifla Rova, Rova says that's not true. Lema Hareini Be'erki. Hareini Be'erech Ploni. You can say, I am Be'erki with my value. Hareini, I am Be'erech Ploni. And that would suffice to create the neder, because it's indicating you are the one responsible, because of hereini. You're not using the word alai. That means if you could express it this way, when you say alai, that means you are taking personal responsibility. That's number one. Bo tanyo, we have a bright Rabbi Natan Omer, v'nartan et erkecha, v'yomahu kodesh l'ashem. On that day, you will give the erech as kodesh l'ashem. Matamadomar. What is that coming to teach you? The fish in Matsino, because we find by Hekte Shot Umasrot, Shemit Halima Ma'ot, Shebechulin, when it comes to Hektesh and Maser Sheni, you can redeem them onto monies of Chulin. You can exchange the Kedusha from the item itself onto the monies. The item is released from its Kedusha, and the Kedusha transfers over onto the monies. Nignevu Shavdu, Einan Echayavim Bachrodan. And if they are stolen or lost, then you're not responsible for them. Meaning the monies that redeemed the item, you are no longer responsible for them. Which is interesting. Tosafot discusses the dynamic over here. He says that it's definitely speaking about Maaser Sheni. He says, Ve'ezo Hekdesh Mayri. What exactly is the Hekdesh that we're speaking about over here? If he says Hare Zeh, why does it matter that he redeemed it? Even the item itself he's not responsible for because he said Hare Zeh, not Hare Alai. And if he says Hare Alai, why does it redeeming it onto a monies change his personal obligation to ensure it gets there? So he says, Avagav dehektesh gufei chayav achriyoto. When you say Hare Alai, even though you have a personal obligation to ensure it gets there, kevin shenit chalel, enu chayav achriyuta maot. You're not responsible. You have somehow discharged your obligation by transferring it over to these monies. He says, imkain, the problem with that explanation, which is pretty novel to start with, the fact that your obligation changes between the time that it's the object itself versus when you've now transferred it over a kedusha into something else. He says that explanation will explain what they're saying here, but then it becomes more problematic, which is, what does that have anything to do with the case of Arachin? By Arachin, you don't exchange the kedusha into monies. The monies are exactly what you promised in the first place. You said the value of the individual. The individual is not kadosh, neither is the person who's dedicating it. It's just that when you bring the monies become kadosh. How can you compare that to the case of Hekdesh, where you're redeeming Hekdesh or Kedusha for something else? So Tosafot says, that's the explanation, but then it doesn't necessarily look like they're parallel, the cases. But the Gemara here says, by the case of Hekdesh and the case of Maaser Sheni, you redeem it on the monies. If you do redeem it onto these monies, you have no responsibility for it. Yolkolav Zekain. You would think Arachin have the same din. So that's where Tosafot says, I don't see the comparison. You're not redeeming. Here the monies are the Kedusha itself, because that's the Kedusha that you promised. Talmud Omar, Benatan et Harkecha. That you give the Erkecha, Chulin. They remain Chulin, actually, voted de Gizbar, until they reach the hands of the Gizbar. So now the pasuk that they're quoting over here has nothing to do with Arachin. It happens to where it mentioned the word Erech in it, but it's not associated with Arachin. And that is a case where an individual is makdish a stei mikneh. There are two types of fields that you can have. There's a stei achuza, which is a field that you inherited from your father, parents, forefathers, relatives. It's something that comes to you birusha, where you have ownership in it, which is a permanent ownership. Which means that if you sell it in the interim, you'll get it back on the yovel, because it's a stei achuza. There is a mechanism for being makdish that, and then there are rules when you're makdish that. There's also something called a stem mikneh. A stem mikneh is something where you purchase the field from someone else. And there you have a leasehold on the field. You do not own the field. That's because in the yovel, it's going to go back to the original owner. So you have the rights to the produce and the production and the working or anything on the field until the yovel. If you're makdish such a field, you can only be makdish it for as long as you own it. You only own it in the yovel. You're going to be makdish to the yovel. That means when the yovel comes, the field's going to return to the original owner, whether it's in the hands of Hekdesh or whether it's your hands right now, because you can only makdish it as far as your ownership exists. For that stei mikneh, the Torah has a program by which you redeem it. And that is that you check how many years are left to the yovel, and then you assume the value based on the value between now and the yovel. That's how much it'll cost to either redeem it early or what the value is that you're giving to Hekdesh at this point in time. And it says about that, he will then calculate the value of the field until the Yovel. Then, on that day, he will give it to Hekdesh as the value. Now, the problem in the Pasuk is twofold. One is, the puzzle begins, v'chishev lo ha-kohen et michsach ha-erkecha, achnot ha-yovel. So the kohen is assessing the value until the yovel. Then you would have said, v'natan oto ba-yomahu kodesh l'ashem. You've already explained the word erkecha is what we're after. That's the subject of the posuk. Then why do you have to say again, v'natan etah erkecha? We know that's what you're doing because that's what the Kohen is calculating. So of course when you say v'natan oto, it would reference back to the erech at the beginning of the pasuk. So the word ha'erkecha is extraneous in the second half of the pasuk. That's number one. The second problem in the second half of the pasuk is v'natan, that you give it to the Kohen. And as Rashi points out over here, that by hekdesh, because the pasuk says earlier, ima magdish yigalit beito, yatsav chamishit kesev erkecha alav, v'hayalo. So v'hayalo means that it's immediately now in the hands of hekdesh, after he has the kesev erkecha alav. When you are the owner and you redeem it, it says there that you redeem it at 1 1/5. I mean, you have to add on an additional fifth on top of that. And then, v'hayalo. And then that's it. You're done. Then it belongs to hekdesh. So you see two things. One is by hekdesh, hayalo. As soon as you separate or segregate out the money to redeem it, the monies are in the hands of hekdesh and you're done. So that presents a problem as to the v'natan in our puzzle. Number two is you have the extra word erkecha here. So now when the puzzle says v'natan, that only becomes hekdesh once it's given. That obviously is not speaking about the redemption of the field here, because that's v'hayalo. As soon as you separate out the money, it's kodesh. Here it says it's not done until v'natan. Number two is it uses the word erkecha. So what Rashi says is the chachamim here split the pasuk and say, the first half of the pasuk is speaking about redeeming a field. First half of the pasuk. Then what do? You redeem that money, you give that money, and it's automatically in the hands of hekdesh immediately. Second half of the pasuk is speaking harachin. V'natan et erkecha b'yomahu kodesh l'Hashem. That you will give the erech to the mikdash, and on that day it will become kodesh. And that's what the Gemara is darshaning over here, that when it comes to arachin, the item or the monies are not hekdesh until they reach the hands of the hekdesh. Now the truth is, many of the achronim point this out over here, that we find in other places in Shas, that you do have the capacity to make the monies that you exchange for the arachin into hekdesh earlier on. It's just that it doesn't discharge your obligation until it reaches the hand of hekdesh. As opposed to other situations where we say, wherever it is, it's in the hands of hekdesh and you're done. By the case of arachin, that is not the case, because by arachin, you need to get it to the hands of hekdesh before it becomes arachin, until it fulfills that din of arachin. That is, over here, the Gemara says that you would think av zekein, so too by arachin, once you've segregated out or separated out the money, you're done. Just like by the case where you redeem the Maaser Sheni or you redeem the hekdesh, that you would be done. Because it's now in the hands of hekdesh. If it gets stolen or lost, you're not responsible. You would think the same thing by erechin. Tamalomer natan et erkecha, that you give the erech, it remains chulin ad sheyavod lidei gizbar. Till it reaches the hand of the gizbar, it is chulin. So as I said now, it doesn't literally mean that it is chulin until it reaches the hands of the gizbar. It could already be hekdesh. But you don't discharge your obligation vis-a-vis arachin until it reaches the hands of the gizbar. So then you can't say everybody agrees by arachin, hare alai, that you're not responsible. Over here it says you are responsible. Ela itmar hachi itmar. This is the way you need to express it. Amar Rav Amnuna, kol modim arachin, dafak abdolo mar alai. Even if you never said the word alai, michayev, tichtiv natan et erkecha. So over here, by arachin, you have a much higher standard. Whereas by kochei berek bait and kochei mizbeach, when you said Harei Alai, you have personal responsibility. When you said Harei Zo, you do not have personal responsibility. That's not true by Arachin. By Arachin, whether you say Alai, whether you don't say Alai, you have personal responsibility to ensure that it gets there, because it says, V'natan et erkecha b'yomahu kodesh l'Hashem. Until it's given, it's not fulfilled your obligation of the Arachin, because they are chulin b'hem b'yadcha sh'vodidei gizbar. They are considered or classified as chulin in your hand until they reach the hands of the gizbar. Now that's a technical sense. It could be that they are hekdesh in your hands, it's just that they're considered chulin so that they don't get the status of being as if they are in the hands of hekdesh before they actually reach the gizbar. Right now the Gemara moves on to the next piece of the Mishnah, which is chomer de kisui. By kisui adam, you have chumrot that don't exist by shiluach hakein. The two that are mentioned in the Mishnah are, number one, it applies to chayot and ofot, kisui adam, where shiluach hakein is only by ofot. The second thing is that kisui adam applies to both mizuman and enu mizuman. Doesn't matter if it's your animal in your possession or it's an animal of hefker, it's out in the wild. Whereas shiluach hakein only applies to things that are out in the wild, not things that are in your possession. The Bali Tosafot over here say, what about the fact that there's a difference between shiluach hakein and Kisui Adam, and that Kisui Adam applies both to Zachar and Nekeva, male and female animals, whereas Shiluach HaKein only applies to the mother, Ha'ein. Rav Metzet, the Shiluach HaKein is the Shaleach Tishalach Het Ha'ein. You send away the mother, which seems to mean it applies only to females. So the answer likely is the last line in our Mishnah, which is that there are certain instances where the male is the incubating party in the couple, then there's a machloket over there at the end of the Mishnah as to whether there is a din of Shiluach HaKein or not. So some people believe there is Shiluach HaKein, and therefore it's not an absolute statement that you can make as a difference between Kisui Adam and Shiluach HaKein, and that's why the Mishnah did not offer that. No, Tanu Rabbanan, we have a Braita. It is now going to dissect the pasuk. Ki karei kan sipor lefanecha, ma Talmud Omar. What do each of these words teach you in the pasuk? The fish in Amar, because the pasuk says, shaleach tishalach et ha'im, veta banim tikach lach, that you send away the mother bird and you keep the children for yourself. Yocho yachzor ba'arim v'gva'ot. Maybe you'd have to run around in the mountains and the high places, kadesh yimtzah kein, so that you can find a nest. It sounds like it can't be in your possession, but maybe you have to go out and find it. Tamalomar ki karei. Ki karei means bimi'ura lifanecha. When you happen to come across it, then you have a responsibility to deal with it. But you don't have to go search for it. There's no obligation to go find a cane to do shiluach hakein. Despite the fact, here there's an argument amongst the akronim as to how far that responsibility goes. The Braita here says, you're not responsible to go chase it down. But if you come across it, you are responsible. What does that mean, are you responsible? Is this now a mitzvah kiyumit? Which says that if I want the chicks or I want the eggs, I need to do shliach hakein when I happen to come across it. Which is the view of the Chazon Ish, which seems to me to be the more simple reading of what the Gemara is saying over here. It's not demanding that when you bump into it, you must do this. It's rather saying, if you want the eggs and you bump into it, this is what you need to do. You don't need, if you need eggs or chicks, to go run around looking at mountains to find shiluach hakein in order to fulfill the mitzvah to take the children. But if it's a case where you have no interest in the chicks or the eggs, you have no responsibility. On the other hand, the Chavod Yoyer says that what the Braita is saying is, you don't have to search for it. But if you bump into it, it's a chovat for you to do shiluach hakein, which means that you now have a responsibility to fulfill this mitzvah when you bump into it. So it is a chovah of circumstance. So as opposed to the view that we do the Chazon Ish, which is the mitzvah kiyumit. If you need it and you bump into it, then you do this mitzvah this way. According to the Chovat Yair, it's a chovah, but it's a chovah that's only triggered by circumstance or context. You don't have to go chase it down, but if you bump into it, now you're obligated to send it away. And according to the Chovat Yair, even if you don't want the chicks or the eggs, you still need to do the mitzvah shliach hakein in order to fulfill the mitzvah, because the mitzvah is an obligation once you're put into that circumstance or situation that presents itself. It's a very interesting but somewhat difficult understanding. You can read it into the Braita, but it somewhat goes against much of the explanation we gave in terms of the reasoning behind shiluach hakein, whether according to the Rambam, it's rachamim on the briot, or according to the Ramban, it's about you being empathetic and not being achzari, not being cruel. Neither of those seem to be fulfilled when you're doing this mitzvah for no purpose of taking the chicks or the eggs, and you're taking them despite the fact that you don't need them. That seems to be somewhat difficult in that view or given that perspective. Kan, when it says in the pasuk kan a nest, mikol makom, no matter what, afilu be'efroach echad, even if there's only one chick, or be'tzachat, or there's only one egg in there. Meaning a kan doesn't really need to mean a nest in the sense of multiples. It could be a nest because there's one egg in there. It could be a nest because there's one chick in there. So it's kan is not necessarily nesting in the sense of multiples, but rather a kan means any type of nest, means any chick or egg. Tzipor, tohora, velo tmeya. It says, ki akare kan tzipor. Tzipor means only kosher birds, not non-kosher birds. Lifanecha, in front of you, means birshuta yachid, even if it's in a private domain. Baderech b'shut rabim, even if it's in the public domain. B'ilanot minayin, how do I know if it's even in the trees that it's true to? Tamalomar b'choletz, in any tree. B'borot shichin u'mi'arot, in the cisterns, the ditches, and the caves. If that's where the nest is, minayin, how do I know there you're responsible? Tamalomar o'el ha'aretz, even if it's on the ground. V'chim ha'achar, shesofeinu l'rabot kol davar, If in the end we're going to then include everything, meaning Oal Haaretz now says, even on the ground, so if it's on the ground, then it doesn't matter, Rishut Yechid, Rishut Rabim, doesn't matter about Alaitz, then Lifanecha Baderech Lomali. Then those two words before which you interpreted to mean Rishut Yechid, Rishut Rabim, what do I need them for? Lomalecha, they come to teach you. Ma Derech She'ein Kino Biyadecha, just like a Derech, where the nest is not in your control under your auspices, Avko She'ein Kino Biyadecha. The mitzvah of Shulecha Kain only applies to situations in which the nest is not in your control, not in your possession. Mikan Amru. From here they say, Yone Shovach, Biyone Aliyah. The pigeons of the dovecotes and the pigeons of the loft, Vitziparim Shikananu Bitfichim, or the birds that are nesting in the cornices, Ubibi wrote, or in the towers, Ve'avazim, Vitarnagulim. And geese and chickens, shikananu bipardes, that took up nesting in the orchards, chayav bishiluach. In all those instances, you're chayav and shiluach hakein, because you really do not have control over it. Even if you set up the dovecote, the doves are there by their own volition. You're not trapping the doves there. You don't have control over the doves that are there. They come and go as they please. They also feed themselves. They find their own food. It just happens to be that they are located here, which makes it easier for you if you really want to go trap them or take the eggs or the chicks, that you have some form of control over them, but not enough that they're considered under your auspices. Given that, since they're not under your auspices, they are considered to be independent, quote-unquote. And if they're independent, they're chayav in shiluach hakein. Aval kananu b'toch habayit, if they're nesting in the house, b'chein yonei hardisiot, or these types of pigeons which are domesticated or house pigeons, patur mishiluach. In that case, you're patur mishiluach, because those are considered to be under your auspices, under your control. And as Rashi notes over here, any time something is in a chatzer hamishtameret, it's inside of a chatzer where you have control and it's guarded, protected by you, the chatzer will acquire on your behalf, and therefore make it that the shiluach hakein no longer needs to be done, because you're now in your possession. It's something that you now have control and possession over. In that instance, you can no longer do shiluach hakein, even though you never personally took possession of it. Your chatzer acts on your behalf to take possession of it from hefker, and therefore there's no din of shiluach hakein anymore. Amar mar. So now we're going to go back and look at the braita. Ma derech shein kino biyadecha, avko shein kino biyadecha, ha lamali. Why do I need that? Mi ki yikarei nafko. Ki yikarei prat lemizuman. That's the first part of the pasuk already. Kikare means you chance upon it, not that it's in your control or under your auspices. That comes to teach you it's something that's not prepared or ready in front of you. It's something that you chanced upon. Va'od lifanecha lamali. And the question that was asked in the braita, it only answered one of the two questions. After we established ala aretz that the cane or the nest can be anywhere, then what do we need? Derech and lifanecha. You explained to me about derech. You didn't explain to me about lifanecha. What's that for? So again, lifanecha lamali, ella, lifanecha latuye shayu lifanecha umerdu. That comes to include the place where they were already in your possession, but they took off. You had control over them. They were under your auspices. That's like the geese or the chickens that were roosting in your house or in your barn. And then they decided they no longer want to be under your control. And they pack out and they messed out in the fields or in the orchards. That case, you are chayav in shiluach hakein, because they were lefanecha, but they no longer are. But derech, kidereb yudha marav. And but derech comes to teach you the din of Reb Yudha Marav, Damar Yudha Marav, matza kein bayam chayab bishiluach. If you find a nest out on the ocean, or out in the sea, you are chayab in shiluach hakein. Rashi says the scenario is a case where they were nesting in a tree, and then there was a massive flood of some sort, and it washed the tree into the river, into the ocean. And so now this tree is in the middle of the ocean, and they're nesting in the ocean rather than al ha'aretz. So that's, how do you know that? Shnemar, ko amar Hashem enotein bayam derech. This is what Hashem says, the one who makes a path in the sea. So you see that the word derech has application not only al ha'aretz, but even bayam. There is such a thing as a path in the yam, and therefore al ha'derech will include a nest in the yam. El me'ato matza kein b'shamayim. So too, if you find a nest that's hanging out in the heavens, floating around in the heavens, maybe there you should be chayav in shiluach hakein too. Dichtiv, derech nesher b'shamayim. The way of the vulture is in the heavens. Hachanami, You're going to say he's chayev b'shulach again in that case? My answer is no. Derech nesher yikre, derech stama lo yikre. It's called the way of the vulture. It is not called the way generally, generically. And therefore, it doesn't qualify for the derech in the pasuk. It's amrilei popunai l'Rav Matno. So Papunai then asked the following question of Rav Matno. Matza kein b'rosho shel adam mahu. What happens if you find a nest on the top of someone's head? Is that considered to be ala aretz? Or is that not considered to be ala aretz? Amar, he says, v'adama al rosho. The way Rashi explains this is, you find earth or dirt on his head. It should not be called adama anymore. Adama is a specific reference to things that are attached to the ground. It's when the earth or the dirt is in the ground, it's called adama. Once it's removed from the ground, it's called afar. It changes its name when it's detached. The fact that it calls it adama when it's on the head of the person shows you don't see that as being detached from the ground. Or in essence, the person is a bridge between the ground and that which is on his head. Or you can express it this way, which is adam is exactly that. Adam and adama in some way are synonymous. And therefore, when the nest is on the head of the person, it's the equivalent of being on the ground itself, because the person does not either create a hefsek between the adama and the adama on his head, because we say call it adama on his head, or that the person himself is adama, and therefore there's no hefsek over here. The havamina would have been possibly that because the person has a nishama, that maybe there's something separate or distinct about them that's not the adama. The adama is only the gufa adam, but they have a nishama. That would then open up the possibility that you could differentiate between people and animals. That maybe people have this din and not animals. And therefore the Gemara here says Adama because Adam is Adama. And that's why it works over here. It doesn't work by an animal. Or you could say that the answer about animals were obvious, that they're part of the ground because they don't have a neshama. The only question was about people who have a neshama. Maybe they're distinct from the ground. And the answer is no, Adama al-Rusho. Now, a couple of agadic statements that come out of nowhere, because the Papunai asked Rav Matna about them, and they're very interesting. Moshe mina Torah minayin. How do we know that Moshe is found in the Torah? Now, obviously, Moshe is in the Torah. His name is mentioned all over the Torah. But how do we know that the Torah predicted such a person would prophetically come and see B'nai Yisrael? It says, Bishagam hu basar. This is in Bereishit, when it's talking about God destroying the world. He says over there that I can't leave people around forever because they are made of flesh. And therefore, I'm going to give them 120 years to see if they can rectify their ways. Otherwise, I'm going to wipe them out. There it says, Bishagam hu basar. And as Rashi explains over here, Bishagam in Gematria is 345. And Moshe in Gematria is 345. And the 120 years that are mentioned there is also a hint to Moshe who lived for 120 years. So that is Bishagam Ubasar. That's the hint to Moshe. Haman min haTorah minayin. How do we know that Haman is found in the Torah? Hamin haEitz. Again, this is in Bereishit, where it's speaking about the Eitz Adat. Did you eat from min haEitz that I told you not to eat from? Did you eat from that tree? So there the word Hamin is spelled Haman. And Haman ends up being Taloi al haEitz. So Haman on the Eitz, that's the prophetic indication of Haman. Esther min haTorah minayin. How do we know about Esther? It says, Vanochi haster astir, that I will hide my face from you. It's part of the Tochacha, that Hashem says that when you are in Galut and you've been sent away, and even though you've begun to do tshuva, Hashem says, I'm going to hide my face from you. I'm going to make myself as if I don't exist. So haster astir, both from the perspective that Esther is found in the words there, as well as Esther Astir, which is that during the time of Mordechai and Esther, the salvation comes through natural means and not miraculous means. That I will be hidden, yet I'll be there to save you. That's Esther Astir Panai. Mordechai min haTorah minayin. How do we know that exists in the Torah? Dichtiv mar diror. It says with the ingredients of the Ketoret, it calls it mar diror, umitergaminon. And the Targum, the translation of that is, Mar Dachya. So the word Dror is Dachya, and if you put them together, Mar Dechai, so it becomes Mordechai, and this is one of the primary spices of the Ketoret. Just like, as Rashi says, Mordechai was a leader of the people, he was a leader in the Sanhedrin, he was a Talmud Chokhom, and therefore Mordechai is that predictive nature that there's going to be a leader that has this name of Mordechai. Question is, why are they asking about these names in particular? What's unique about these names? The Marsha claims that all of these names are foreign names. They are not Jewish or Hebrew names. And that's why the question is arising, which is Moshe, whose name comes from Bat Paro, how do we know that it's found in the Torah? How do we know there's a source for such a name in the Torah? Same thing, Mordechai and Esther. Mordechai is Marmaduk. Esther is Yistar, which were the Persian gods, their Persian names. So how do we know up there? And Haman clearly is a Persian name. So the Gemara wants to know, all these personalities whose names are not Jewish or Hebrew names, how do we know that they were already predicted in the Torah? I would suggest maybe that there is some question here as to the nature of the individual. It's possible that by Moshe Rabbeinu, you might come to the mistaken impression that Moshe is not a human being, that Moshe is not man, but rather half man, half God. Or you could have the deifying of Moshe Rabbeinu. They ask the source for Moshe Rabbeinu, what is it? B'shagam hu basar. He's a human being. I mean, that the answer of who Moshe Rabbeinu is b'shagam hu basar. That statement that God says, human beings are human beings. That's all they are. They're no more than a human being. He might have been the greatest human being. He might have had a connection with God that exceeds anyone else, but he's still b'shagam hu basar. And similarly, with regards to Mordechai and Esther, how do we know that these individuals who have Persian names, how do we know that they were anointed by God to be his messengers in the salvation of Bnei Israel? How do we know they were just weren't political leaders that took an opportune moment to do whatever they did? It's popular today to say that they were assimilated Jews, so that would make it even more pronounced. But even if they're not assimilated Jews, they're Jews who definitely have now acculturated in Persia. How do we know that those individuals were really the Yad Hashem? That they were really expressing God's will, and they were the messengers of God, to the point that the Gemara in Megillah wants to know, is Esther part of the canon or not part of the canon? And the fact that Hashem's name is not found in the Megillah, all of these items combined bring up questions as to both the canonization of the Megillah, as well as to whether these were God-directed events. And that's really the question here. Is this a godly act that then requires us to look at the Megillah as being a part of the canon, and to then celebrate Purim as a holiday? And that's the nature of the Gemara's question, and that's what it says. Esther and Mordechai ben Aturah Minai, that could be the explanation of Haman as well, or the explanation by Haman is, how do you know Haman is a descendant of Amalek that requires his annihilation, or Mordechai didn't bow down to him? It connects it to the Eitz Hadaat, to the item that is Asur, the thing that you're not allowed to partake from, something that is differentiated from the other trees. And Naaman is that character. He's from Amalek, which has a different rule than all the other nations. That would be my personal, maybe, addition as to why maybe the Gemara is asking these questions and bringing the Agadah over here. Bezer she'enu min ha'mizuman. What's considered to be enu mizuman? What's considered to be something that's not in your possession or your control? B'chia Rabbi Shimon. They argue, chatani hardesiot. Chantani hardisiot. So the pigeons, the yonei hardisiot, which were mentioned in the Braita, they're also mentioned in our Mishnah, they are considered to be something that is domesticated in your control, and therefore they are mizuman, and therefore you do not have to do shiloach hakein. The question is, what is the pronunciation of the word? It's obviously a foreign word. It's not a Hebrew word. What is the word? The two possibility is hadarsiot, or hardasiot. Mandatani hardasiot. The one who says that it's hardasiot, ashem hordus. It's because Herod was the first one to start domesticating or basically breeding these pigeons on a commercial level or commercial basis to the point where they were classified as being mizuman rather than being in the wild. This would be as opposed to the pigeons of the Aliyah or the pigeons of the Shovach. These were these types of shovachim where they were really managing and commercializing them like you have in Beit Guvrin. Those large types of shovachim there where they did it basically as a livelihood. This was what they did to produce on a commercial basis pigeons. Uman detani hadarsiot ashem mikoman. These are pigeons from that particular location. So depending on what your girsa is, it's either these are Herodian pigeons or these hadarsiot pigeons. but it's defining a certain either species or a certain type of commercialization of the pigeons that makes them mizuman. Amrav Kana, the Didi Chazian Vikaiman, I saw the commercial Shovachim of Herod, and they were Shitzar Dari, 16 rows, Bipate Mile. Each one of them a width of a meal. Mila, the Aramaic term for the Roman mile, so it's a meal. So they were 16 rows, each one of them a meal long. That was his pigeon coop or his pigeon shovach. Vavikare, and all of them were going, Kiri, Kiri. So that's the sound that they were making. And the word Kiri, as Rashi notes over here, means my master, my master. So they were all, quote unquote, trained to say my master to Herod. There was one little rebel there, decided that he didn't want to say Kiri Kiri. Amra lo chaverta, his friend says to it, leans over and says to it, Suma, you fool. Amre Kiri Kiri. I'm telling you, good advice, you should start saying Kiri Kiri. Because if you don't, we'll see what's going to happen to you, but Amra Suma, this bird, the rebel, responds and says, Amre Kiri Bire. What you really should say is Kiri Bire. And as he notes here, in the notes here on the side, Biri b'lashon yevani, Biri in Greek is Eved, is a servant. And he's saying, you should say, Kiri, my master, the servant. The reason being, based on the Chazal's view, that Herod was a slave in the house of the Hashmoneim dynasty, and that he rebelled against them, killed them out, and took over the Melucha. So they viewed him as being an Eved. That's the Gemara in the beginning of Avodah Zarah that goes through all that Agadata about Herod and Herod's standing. And so this bird was basically indicating this idea that Herod's not the master. He's really the master that was a slave. Achiu v'shachtu. As the friend predicted, when he said, Kiri Biri, the Avadim of Herod showed up and took care of that little bird over there. They eliminated that sound. Again, I think maybe an Agadic interpretation over here is, that Herod did all these great things around Eretz Yisrael, but when it comes down to it, he was really a slave, and he was elevated because he rebelled against his masters. The way that he eliminated people saying that is he wiped out anybody who reminded him of that or said that, he killed out. And so that's the same idea here with the pigeons. Amar Rabbi Ashi, Amar Le Rabbi Chinina, Milin. So Rashi says, Rabbi Chinina told me that that was all smoke and mirrors. Nothing ever happened like that. That's not true. Mara says, Milin Sagadatka? How can you say that it never happened or he never saw it? Rav Kana says, I saw it. And we trust when Rav Kana says, I saw it, that he saw it. Ela Ema Bimilin. They really weren't speaking the birds over there. Milin means through witchcraft or sorcery. The fact that they were saying Kiri Kiri and Kiri Biri and all that noise that they were making, that wasn't because they really know how to speak. It's because there's sorcery or witchcraft that caused them to say that. So again, this idea that you're putting people under a spell to say that, I am the master, when you're really not the master. Ov tamei patur mi l'shaleach. He said in the Braita that if it's a non-kosher bird, you don't have to do shidur hakein. Minahane mile. How do you know that's true? I'm Rabbi Yitzchak, I'm a kra. Ki kare kan sipor lefanecha. Ov. If it had said ov, mashmalan bento or bentamei. The word ov is used both to describe kosher birds and non-kosher birds. Sipor, Tohor Ashkechan Dikre Tzipor, Tamei Lo Ashkechan Dikre Tzipor. When it comes to Tzipor, we find the word Tzipor only used by kosher birds, not used by non-kosher birds. The fact that the Torah expressed it as a Tzipor shows you that it's only speaking about kosher birds and not about non-kosher birds. Tashma, is that true? It says that you may not make for Avodah Zarah Tavnit Kol Tzipor Kanaf. You may not make any bird or winged animal. My love, Tzipor, Bentaor, Bentameh. It says you may not make any bird. That means both kosher and non-kosher birds. Kanaf, winged animal, is Chagavim. Refers to the locust or those types of flying things. So there's a restriction against making any of them. Now, obviously, there's a restriction against making images of non-kosher birds. So it has to be subsumed somewhere in the pasuk over here. And it would seemingly be subsumed under the word Tzipor. It says, lo. Tzipor tahor. Tzipor means the kosher birds. Kanaf includes the tamei and the chagamim, the non-kosher birds and the locust. Tashma. It says, hachaya v'chol be'ema remes v'tzipor kanaf. Again in Tehillim, where it says that they will all give praise to Hashem, It's clear here that the non-kosher bird also gives praise to Hashem. So where is the non-kosher bird subsumed? My love, tzipor bentor bentamei. The tzipor means both the kosher and non-kosher birds. They give praise to Hashem. The kanaf then includes the chagavim, the other flying items. Lo, tzipor only includes the tahor, the kosher bird. Kanaf includes the tamei, the non-kosher bird, the chagavim. Tashma. In Breishit, it says, kol tzipor, kol kanaf. Every bird, every flying item. My love, kidemakshinan. The same question we had before, that tzipor includes non-kosher and kosher birds, kanaf includes chagavim. Lo, kidemishanina. No, the answer is no. Like we said, very interesting. You don't see this often in the Gemara. The Gemara is just saying, alright, we did this a couple of times. You can reference back to what we did before. Same question we had before is a question here. Same answer is the same answer, which is, tzipor only includes the kosher birds, kanaf includes the non-kosher birds and the other flying things. Tashma. Vata ben Adam amor le tzipor kol kanaf. You, ben Adam, go say to all birds that are flying, my love, kidakshin, and again, the way we asked before, tzipor is both kosher and non-kosher birds. Kol kanaf refers to the chagavim. Lo, kidashanina, like we answered before, tzipor is the kosher birds, kanaf includes the kosher and non-kosher birds. Tashma. Ube'an pohi yiduran tziporei shmaya. This is in Daniel, when it is describing the tree that Daniel is explaining to Nebuchadnezzar of the dream. It says, in its branches shall live the tziporei shmaya, the birds of the heaven. There's no reason to think that there's a differentiation between kosher birds and non-kosher birds. They all nest in trees, so it doesn't seem to make any difference whether it's kosher or non-kosher. And number two is, there's no kanaf in that puzzle. So there, the word tzipor has to include both kosher and non-kosher birds. So the Gemara answer is, that's not a problem. Tzipore shamaya ikru, tzipore stama lo ikru. Tzipore shamaya, the birds of the heaven, that includes kosher and non-kosher birds. Tzipor alone, that only includes kosher birds, not non-kosher birds. Tosfot over here asks, why doesn't the Gemara bring... There are numerous psukim, all of which Tosfot quote, that have the word tzipor in it without the word kanaf. And in all those instances, you have the same question that you have here from the pasuk in Daniel, which is that those tziporim must be including kosher and non-kosher birds, and the Gemara would have plenty of proof to the fact that the word tzipor is used both for kosher and non-kosher birds. In each of the instances, Tosfot goes on to show why the word tzipor in all those cases is only speaking about kosher birds. Even though from a superficial view, it would look like all the tzipor means birds in those cases, irrespective of whether it's kosher or not kosher, Tosfot in each of the instances shows why tzipor really means a kosher bird there, and that's why the Gemara didn't bring these psukim as questions, because they don't disprove what we're saying, that tzipor means a kosher bird, because all of them really mean a kosher bird over there. Okay, we're going to stop here, two lines down on the top of Kuf Mem Amud Aleph.